Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Connection. It's so great to have you along with us on this Sunday morning. I'm Ann Baldwin, as you just heard, one of your hosts of this program, and Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, the president and CEO of The Connection. She's spending some much deserved time with her mother. So, of course, I've got my other trusty colleague here, Beth Connor, who's also from The Connection, who's always a great co-host with me. Beth, thanks for filling in for Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann. Always a pleasure.
It sure is. And I'm so excited for you to introduce our next guest because, as we all know, you know, COVID is one thing, but some of the problems that we have in our society are just constant, right? Like incarceration and substance abuse and all of those things. So our next guest has really taken those issues and moved it to the next step. And so I'll let you go ahead and do the honors because you set up this interview of introducing Patrick.
Thanks, Ann. So I'm very pleased to present one of my colleagues at The Connection, Patrick Fallon. And Patrick is the Director of Community Justice Services, which is a large job at The Connection. He oversees all of our reentry programs, and he has been with The Connection since 2005 in different capacities. Patrick is always very creative in finding solutions for situations that happen. And, of course, with COVID going on right now, we've been asked in many ways to conduct our services a little bit differently. You know, nonprofits are figuring it out when they need to see people and to provide services for folks. And Patrick is just a shining example of someone who has taken a difficult situation and turned it into something positive for a lot of people. So with that, I would love to introduce our listeners to Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you? Thank you. As you said, I've been with The Connection since 2005. I actually started working as a case manager at one of our work release programs and transferred from there to our behavioral health outpatient centers and transferred from outpatient to our family support housing department. But my passion always lied with helping individuals reenter from incarceration. Growing up in my neighborhood, I was touched by this personally. I saw a lot of people struggling to reenter successfully from incarceration. There was like little opportunity. There was no hope. So my passion lies in instilling hope in people that are returning to the community from incarceration. I think hope is one of the biggest keys to success. If somebody doesn't
Absolutely.
Have hope, then they don't really think that they're going to make it. So, one of the mantras within my program is that we instill hope.
Can I ask
confidence in people that they can successfully do this.
So, Patrick, can I ask you a question? I always wondered, when someone is incarcerated and then they're released, does the state give them anything to give them a head start? I just can't imagine, you know, taking off your prison uniform and being given the bag of your possessions, which is probably maybe a watch and an outfit and some shoes, and saying, good luck, you know, we hope to not see you again. What kind of resources are provided to these individuals? Any?
Resources that are provided to these individuals are such as the programs I oversee statewide. They depend a lot on the nonprofit sector to provide services such as case management, substance abuse treatment, vocational training, and employment searching. So the Department of Corrections relies, and the state as a whole relies heavily on the nonprofit sector to provide these services. One of the challenges I've found since doing this work at the capacity I'm at right now is that there's not much goodwill overall from the public when it comes to people reentering society. There tends to be a stigma attached to those incarcerated that they deserve what they have, and you know, there's very little money. Where on the other hand, if you look at behavioral health services, women and children, homeless, there's a much larger pot of money available from the government for those services. So often I find myself competing with a lot of other agencies for a small pot of money to provide the best services we can provide.
So Patrick, you said there is a stigma that comes with folks coming out of incarceration. I get that. So how do you break that? Why should we have a different attitude when it comes to perhaps employing these people or supporting these people once they're let go?
Well, one of the speeches that I love to give when I'm at the legislative office building is that, you know, from a societal standpoint, if these people are successful, they contribute to society. So the ultimate goal for me is to take somebody who, for lack of a better term, may have been a drain on state taxes to becoming a tax contributor, where they're actually contributing to the overall good of the state through taxes, also through just being good citizens, being fathers and mothers to their children. A lot of what I see is very generational. Children grow up, they see their parents incarcerated, it becomes normalized. And what happens is when they reach a certain age, you know, unfortunately, they just sort of accept the reality of what they grew up with, that at some point it's totally normal for them to be incarcerated. And I really strive to break that cycle.
And we've had a lot of success stories, right, Patrick, over the years?
Oh, absolutely. I can't count the number of times where I may be in a store or at an event, and somebody who went through one of our programs will come up to me and thank me, and thank the connection for the services we provided.
Talk a little bit about the types of services that are provided. I know we have, you know, several different programs under your jurisdiction, but what kinds of services are there out there, and how do folks, once they are released from incarceration, how do they reintegrate into society? What are the steps through our program?
So, through our programs, Department of Corrections will make what you call a referral to our program. We overlook the referral to ensure that they don't have medical needs that exceed our capacity to handle, that they have mental health needs that don't exceed their capacity to successfully operate in a program with a congregate population. Unfortunately, some mental illnesses do not do very well when they're surrounded by, you know, 30, 40 men at the same time. So we screen for that. We let DOC know whether or not we accept the person. We very, very rarely deny a person. Any denials to any programs within my department actually come from me after the manager and the director of that program explained to me exactly why we're going to make a denial. Once the individual enters our program, we assess them. Our overall goal is to reduce their risk to recidivate. So what we do is we actually measure different parts of them, such as education, leisure, employment, substance history, mental health, friends and family. We actually assess a multitude of things with the client and identify what their highest risk sections are, and then they will sit with the case manager and formulate what we call a treatment plan to address those high risk areas with the goal of bringing down the overall risk. So you know, when they get in a program, if, say, for instance, they have no employment history, they didn't complete their education in high school, a treatment plan may look something like a client enrolling in night school or adult education while simultaneously working with our vocational specialists to formulate a resume, learn how to explain their time incarcerated, interview, and then actually retain a job, which is one of our biggest issues when it comes to employment, is a lot of our guys lack the soft skills to retain a job once they have actually obtained a job. So we do a lot of what I call back-end work on the vocational side, where we not only train people, get their resumes set up, do mock interviews with them, help them secure a job, we hold groups where we work on soft skills, employment etiquette, so that people are able to maintain a job and keep it while they're looking for their next opportunity.
Wow, it sounds like a lot of wraparound services, which is exactly what, you know, apparently leads to success. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Patrick Fallon, and he's the Director of Community Justice Services at The Connection. And Patrick, you know, I have to say, in reading and doing my background work for this interview, you've done all this and you've been pursuing and passionate about your job while also going through some of your own personal hardships. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I back in March, I would say, I was displaced, me and my three grandchildren and two dogs, by a house fire. We ended up in a hotel for almost 3 months. Ironically, it was at the height of when COVID started ramping up. So it was a bit of a challenge to try to juggle both being displaced in a hotel and formulating these operation and contingency plans for each of the programs, where we would set aside quarantine sections for any clients that were symptomatic, putting protocols in place for staff and clients to wear masks, taking temperatures, constantly reinforcing the importance of following these protocols for staff and clients' own safety. So it was a bit of a juggling act for a little while. It kept me busy.
But this is a great example, though, of who Patrick is. Patrick takes the highest mountain and climbs it, and has done that in his work here at The Connection for, you know, many years. While this was going on, Patrick, the Department of Correction asked you to open a new program, correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was a direct result of the COVID pandemic. While formulating these operation and contingency plans for COVID and setting aside quarantine spaces and really taking a realistic view of if people will adhere to the protocols that are in place, particularly clients, what I recognized was that there was a real danger for COVID to actually run rampant within a congregate program such as one of my halfway houses. That began a conversation with the Department of Corrections that, you know, though I can do everything in my power to quarantine people, to feed them in their room, I really think we need to pull individuals out of programs once they're diagnosed positive with COVID. Shortly after that conversation, I received a phone call, and they agreed with me and asked me if I'd be willing to utilize a new program space in Montville that had yet to be open to create a program specifically for individuals coming back to the community from incarceration with their halfway houses that tested positive for COVID. I was very passionate that this was needed. I agreed to take this on and was told, well, they would like it open within 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So I remember that time. That was a big scramble, Patrick.
That was a bit of a shock, but it kept, I'm really grateful for it. It kept me busy through a difficult time. Being displaced with the fire, homeschooling three children, maintaining two dogs in a hotel, and then having this on my plate, it really took my mind off of what I was going through personally, so I was able to actually sit down and compartmentalize situations better. I had to write a proposal. The proposal went back and forth with the Department of Corrections and internally in the agency several times. There had to be protocols written for this program. These protocols had to align with CDC and Department of Public Health guidelines for how to manage the COVID virus. So there was a lot of work. We really do. I must say we have some amazing staff at the agency. I reached out to staff that were currently employed and actually asked for volunteers to work at this program.
Because there's a risk associated with it, right?
It's very interesting you say that. There is a risk working in this program. However, Department of Corrections was great. They got us all the personal protection equipment that we needed, that I asked for. Myself and some of their medical staff did a tour of the program and set it up in a manner in which I actually put tape lines in the hallway where clients could not pass and where staff could not pass to maintain 6 feet of social distancing as well as the PPE when our staff were interacting with these clients. It was a very interesting situation. It was.
But there was medical support. Oh.
Yes. We have a nurse that comes through and checks daily, a couple of times daily, temperatures, symptoms, which is the other ironic thing and was really a wake-up call for me. As I would be at that program upon its inception the first couple of weeks, we got a huge influx of people into the program. Our census was as high as 24 individuals at one time. And what I began to notice as Department of Correction vans would pull up and bring these individuals into the program, over 90% of them were asymptomatic. No symptoms at all, other than maybe a slight fever, but just as normal as anybody else you would see in a grocery store. There was no way to tell that they actually were positive for coronavirus.
Wow.
That was a real wake-up call. It actually personally helped me to really instill and my children how serious this is. And you cannot tell by looking at somebody whether or not they are contagious or not.
Right, because like you said, they're asymptomatic. So if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Patrick Fallon, the director of the Community Justice Services at The Connection. And we should also mention, since the Department of Correction asked you, Patrick, to start this program where they could pretty much hand off, any folks who had tested positive for COVID, and that was in April of this year. According to what I read, 61 people have actually recovered there from 18 different Department of Correction programs in Connecticut. Is that true?
Yeah, it's actually 62 now.
All right, congratulations.
We're discharging. We have one person in the program who's discharging today. Who's tested negative. You know, one of the interesting things when we look at the numbers and we look at all the protocols that were put in place, one of the most shocking things to me is that it's the only program in my residential network of care that I oversee that did not have one staff member test positive for coronavirus.
Wow, that says a lot.
That's really a tribute to the staff.
Yep.
And how hypervigilant they were, that they made sure they followed every protocol whenever interacting with the people that were positive. I mean, they've done a stellar job of really adhering to every protocol that was created to protect them from contracting this virus. It still amazes me. You know, and that just tells me if society as a whole were more hypervigilant with the way we protect ourselves against this virus, it wouldn't be as prevalent as it is right now. I mean, the proof
absolutely
is in that program.
Yeah.
Where you know, we have staff who are working with people who we know are positive. And just because they know these people are positive, they take every precaution to protect themselves. If society as a whole did that, I think this virus would dwindle quickly. It's very unfortunate that we don't, and that we're not more hypervigilant.
Yeah, how true. How true that is. And this is sort of an example of that, a limited example. Patrick, how long are the clients staying in the program? What's the average length of stay?
It's usually 14 to 20 days. They have to be symptom and fever free for, I believe it's 5 consecutive days.
Are they tested again before they move on, or?
Department of Corrections is just beginning to test before people move on. You know, you have to remember in the beginning, you know, the testing was very difficult. And then we had the rapid testing, which proved very rapidly that it wasn't too accurate most of the time.
Right.
So you know, the testing was actually way behind the virus curve on this. And everybody's just starting to catch up. Where we're able to test more, there's enough available tests. The tests are more reliable. In the beginning, it was a scramble even to get tests.
Right.
For individuals that were in halfway houses.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time, but before we let you go, I think it's important, Beth, if I could read this quote here from Lisa. It says, Patrick Fallon demonstrates our agency values such as compassion, courage, and excellence every day in his work at The Connection. We're so proud of the work that he does, not only at our agency, but across the state to improve the lives of returning citizens. You know, it is amazing what you're doing, Patrick, and, you know, who knows how much longer you're going to have to keep these facilities open, and you're fulfilling a need that, you know, obviously needs to be met. So it was very interesting. We should also mention, too, Beth, that if people want more information on this program or any of the programs that The Connection offers, please go to the website at theconnectioninc.org. That's theconnectioninc.org.
Well, I just want to say a big thank you to Patrick for everything you do every day to protect people in Connecticut. And it's always great to work with you, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you guys for having me.
It was our pleasure. And, of course, a special thanks to all of you for listening to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.